mixing with blood. "That was my dream," Clary whispered. Her voice was choked with tears. Emma stood frozen, staring at Clary's dead body. "That's what I saw."
The sand blew again, and Clary's body vanished from view, just as Jace turned back around.
"What world is this?" he demanded. "Pray you never have to find out," said the king. "The land of Thule is death, and it will rain down death in your world. In Ash's hands it will be the greatest weapon ever known."
"And what will be the cost to Ash?" demanded the queen. "What will be the cost to him? Already you have placed spells upon him. Already you have bled him. You wear his blood around your throat. Deny it if you can."
Emma stared at the vial around the king's throat. She had thought it was a scarlet potion. It was not. She remembered the scar on Ash's throat and felt sick. The king chuckled.
"I have no wish to deny it. His blood is unique. Nephilim blood and demonic blood mixed with the blood of the Fae. I draw power from it, though only a fraction of the power Ash could have if you will allow me to keep the black volume."
The queen's face twisted.
"You are bound by your oath to return it to me, king."
The king tensed. Emma didn't understand as much about fairies as Christina did, but she knew that if the king had sworn he would return the book to the queen at dawn, he would have no choice but to do it.
"It will bring us both indescribable power. Just let me show you."
"No!"
A streak of gray linen and dark hair shot across the room and caught hold of Ash, whirling him off his feet. Ash cried out as Annabelle seized him. She flew with him across the room. Ash's wrist gripped tightly in her hand. The riders rushed after her, the red caps circling from the door. Whirling like a trapped rabbit, she bared her teeth, Ash's wrist still caught in hers.
"I will speak your name,"
she shrieked at the king, and he froze.
"In front of all these people, even if you kill me, they will have heard the word. Now tell them to stand down. They must stand down."
The king made a choking sound as the queen stared in disbelief. He clenched his fists so tightly that his gauntlets bent and shattered. Their metal stabbed into his skin and blood bloomed around the jagged edges.
"She knows your name?" the queen demanded, her voice rising. "That Nephilim knows your name?"
"Stand down, riders,"
the king said in a voice that sounded as if he were being strangled.
"Stand down, all of you."
The riders and redcaps froze. Realizing what was happening, the queen shrieked and ran toward Annabelle, raising her hands, but she was too late. Throwing her arms around Ash, Annabelle hurled herself backward through the portal. There was a sound as of thick fabric tearing. The portal stretched apart and closed over Annabelle and Ash. The queen skidded to a stop, twisting her body to avoid crashing through the portal. Julian sucked in his breath. The image in the portal had changed. Now they could see Annabelle and Ash standing in the broken wasteland, sand swirling about them. The queen screamed, holding out her hands as if she could touch Ash, could enfold him in her arms. For a moment, Emma almost pitied her. The sand swirled again, and Ash and Annabelle vanished from view. The king slumped down on his throne, his face in his hands. The queen spun away from the portal, striding toward the throne. Grief and rage were etched onto her features.
"You have done the second of my children to his death, Lord of Shadows," she said. "There shall never be another."
"Enough of your foolishness,"
the king snapped.
"I am the one who sacrificed for our child."
He indicated the ruin of his face, the glimmer of white bone where flesh should be.
"Your children were, and always have been, nothing but ornaments to your vanity."
The queen screamed something in a language Emma didn't understand, and flung herself at the king, drawing a jeweled dagger from her bodice.
"Guards!"
the king shouted.
"Kill her!"
But the redcaps had frozen, staring in shock at the queen as she brought the dagger down. The king threw up an arm to defend himself. He roared in pain as the knife sank into his shoulder, and blood spattered the ground below the throne. It seemed to spur the redcaps into action. They raced forward to seize the queen, who turned on them in fury. Even the riders were staring. "Now," Adean said. He moved lightning fast, flinging the swords he held into the eager hands of the shadow hunters who surrounded him. Emma caught one out of the air and raced toward Mark and Kieran, Julian and Christina on either side of her. Her nerves caught fire as the redcaps, realizing what was going on, rushed at the advancing Nephilim. She had hated every moment of standing still. As one redcap lunged at her, she leapt for the nearest boulder, caromed off it, and used the force of her rebound to sever another's head as she landed. Blood sprayed blackish red. The king's face was suffused with blood as he saw what his son was doing.
"Adean!"
he bellowed. The sound was like a roar. But Adean was already racing toward Mark and Kieran, knocking redcaps aside with savage blows from his broadsword.
"That's right," Emma thought with a savage pleasure. "Every one of your sons hates you, king."
She spun to engage another redcap, her blade clashing against his iron pike staff. Jace and Clary were battling more redcaps. Julian and Christina were behind Adean, pushing toward Kieran and Mark, who were surrounded by guards.
"Riders!"
the king cried, spittle flying from his lips.
"Stop him! Stop Adean!"
Aelhaed sprang, leaping over the heads of a group of redcaps to land in front of Adean. The prince's broadsword moved with incredible speed, parrying Aelhaed's blade. Adean shouted at Christina and Julian to get to Mark and Kieran and turned back to Aelhaed just as Ethna strode up to them, her sword drawn. Emma ducked low, cutting at the redcap's legs. She said a silent prayer of thanks for Isabel's bracelet, powering her blows as her own body weakened. The guard went down in a welter of blood as Jace raced to Adean's side. His sword slammed against Ethna's with a ringing clang. And Emma remembered why she had always wanted to be Jace Herondale when she was a kid. His sword flew around him like sunlight dancing off water, and for several moments he drove Ethna back while Adean pressed Aelhaed, driving him further away from the throne and from Kieran and Mark. Clary leapt over a boulder, landing beside Emma. She was panting, and her sword was drenched in blood.
"We have to hold the redcaps off," she said. "Come with me."
Emma darted after her, slashing at guards as she went. A group of redcaps, including General Winter, had surrounded Christina and Julian, preventing them from getting near Kieran and Mark. Emma sprang for the rough wall of the throne room. She scrambled up one-handed, looking down at the chaos below. The queen and king were battling back and forth before the throne. Adean and Jace were holding their own against the riders, though Adean had a long cut across one shoulder that was bleeding freely. And Clary was spinning, quick and fast, jabbing at the red-capped guards, and then darting back out of reach with startling swiftness. Emma flung herself off the wall, air rushing past her as she flipped and twisted, landing boots first and sending Winter sprawling. The other redcaps rushed her, and she swung her blade in an arc, slicing the tips from their pikestaffs. She sprang away from Winter and advanced on the other guards, her sword arcing in the air.
"I slew Foul the Rider," she said in her most menacing voice. "I will slay you, too."
They paled markedly. Several fell back, as behind them Julian and Christina rushed to Mark and to Kieran. Julian hauled Mark to his feet, bringing his sword down to sever the chain that connected Mark's wrists. They swung free, each one still bearing an iron wristband. Mark caught hold of his brother with his manacled arms and hugged him quickly, fiercely. Emma's eyes prickled, but there was no time to look at them. She spun and kicked and slashed, the world a chaos of silver and ice and blood. Emma heard Christina call her name. Ice turned to fire. She ran toward the sound, leaping over the toppled rocks, and found Christina standing with a shattered blade in her hand. Kieran was still kneeling, pieces of the broken sword scattered around the chain that bound his wrists to the earth.
"Emma, please,"
Christina began, but Emma was already bringing her blade down. It wasn't Cortana, but it held. The chain shattered, and Kieran leapt to his feet, Christina seizing him by the arm.
"We must go," she said, her eyes frantic. "I can use the artifact to return us."
"Call everyone to you," Emma said.
She pressed her sword into Christina's hand.
"I need to get the copy of the Black Volume." Christina tried to shove the sword back to Emma.
What? Where?
But Emma was already running, kicking off the uneven floor to hurl herself at the steps to the throne. She heard the king bellow. She heard Julian cry out her name. She had reached the top of the steps. The throne loomed up before her, dark and granite, the printer-bound pages of the black volume resting on a great stone arm. Emma seized the book and spun around just in time to hear Adain cry out, a hoarse shout of pain. Eohaid had him trapped against the side of a massive boulder. The front of Adain's tunic was soaked with blood, and Eohaid's sword kissed his throat.
"Shall I slay him, king?"
Eohaid said in a gloating voice. Most of the bystanders in the room had frozen. Christina had her hand over her mouth. She was the one who had brought Adain here, after all. Even the redcaps were staring.
"Your traitor, son. Shall I end his life?"
The queen began to laugh. Redcaps had caught her by the arms, but she was still smiling her strange, cat-like smile.
"Oh, my lord," she said. "Is there a one of your sons that does not hate your name?"
The king bared his teeth.
"Cut his throat," he said to Eohaid.
Adain's muscles tensed. Emma's brain worked frantically. She saw Kieran start forward, but there was no way he could reach Adain in time. Eohaid raised his blade like an executioner, his other arm braced against Adain's chest. There was a horrible, choking cry. Adain, Emma thought wildly, stumbling down the steps, but no. Eohaid was turning away from his captive, his sword still raised, his face contorted in surprise. The king was sinking to his knees, blood running freely down the front of his rich doublet. Kieran's hand was still raised in the air. Something protruded from the king's throat, a sliver of what looked almost like glass. The elf bolt arrowhead, Emma realized with a start. Kieran had flung his necklace at the king with incredible force. Eohaid and Ethna rushed toward the king, their gleaming swords in hand, their faces pictures of dismay. Adain, too, walked toward his father. Kieran did not move. He was leaning heavily on Christina's shoulder, his face expressionless. Kneeling, the king clawed at his throat. To Emma's shock, he seemed to be weakening. His hand scrabbled at the embedded elf bolt and then fell to his side, hanging uselessly. Adain looked down at him.
"Father," he said in a low voice, "forgive me."
Ethna's face contorted into a mask. Jace and Clary, both bloody and filthy, were staring in amazement. Distantly, Emma knew she was seeing something remarkable. The dying of a king who had ruled for 1,000 years. Ethna whirled a glare to Kieran.
"Kinslayer!" she cried. "Patricide!"
"He was trying to save Adain," Mark shouted back.
"Are you blind, Ryder?"
"Because he wants to be king," snarled Eohaid. "Because he wants the throne."
The queen began to laugh. She drew free of the red caps who had held her as if their touch were no more than spider webs, though several fell, screaming to the floor, their palms burned and blackened, their fingers snapped.
"Already they scavenge for your throne like dogs worrying at a bone," she said to the king, as blood ran out the corners of his mouth and his eyes rolled up to the whites. "What legacy? You think Adain will be king after you, as you wished?"
She seized Adain by the arm. He cried out in shock and pain. The queen's hair whipped around them both, and she grinned down at the king.
"You took my son," she said. "Now I take yours."
She vanished, and Adain vanished with her. The king gave a cry and fell to the ground, scrabbling at the earth with gauntleted hands. His crown tumbled from his head and struck the stone floor as he choked out garbled words. Perhaps he was trying to say the queen's name, perhaps Adain's, perhaps even Kieran's. Emma would never know. The king's body stiffened and slumped, and both Eohaid and Ethna cried out. He had gone still, but his blood continued to run out around him, snaking across the floor in rivulets. The redcaps were scrambling back from the king's body, their faces masks of horror. Winter lowered the pike staff he had been aiming at Emma.
The king is dead. King Aron is dead, he cried,
and Emma realized it must be true. It was safe to speak the king's true name now that he was no longer alive. The redcaps fled, save Winter, who held his ground, pouring out of the throne room in a river of crimson. Christina was shouting for the other shadow hunters. She held Mark by one hand, and he gripped a stunned-looking Kieran. Jace and Clary were scrambling over a pile of boulders to get to them. Julian was only yards away. Emma began to run as the king's body burst into flames. She cast one look back over her shoulder. The king was burning, and so was the ground everywhere his blood had spilled. Small fires and larger ones burning fierce and hot, consuming the stone floor as if it were kindling. The king's body had already vanished behind a sheet of flames. A figure reared up out of the smoke, cutting Emma off. It was Ethna. She gleamed all over like a weapon, her bronze armor unsmudged, her metallic eyes gleaming with bloodlust.
My oath to the king died with him, she said, baring her teeth. Your life is forfeit now, murderer.
She lunged at Emma. Emma's sword was gone. She flung up the copy of the Black Volume, and Ethna's sword plunged into it. Ethna flung it aside in disgust, the shredded remains of the book landing on the burning ground, its pages bursting into flames. Emma scrabbled at her belt for a dagger. She threw it, and Ethna caught it in her free hand. She flung it aside with a contemptuous sneer. Emma could hear Clary calling out to her, and the others shouting for her to come quickly. She realized with a sinking heart that they must not be able to see her. They wouldn't know she needed help. They wouldn't know. Ethna's blade flew through the air, bronze cutting through smoke. Emma twisted aside and fell to the ground, rolling to avoid the slashing blows that followed. Each time Ethna's blade barely missed her, it cut a deep gouge into the stone floor. It was getting harder for Emma to breathe. She scrambled to her knees, only to have Ethna plant a booted foot in her shoulder. She shoved and Emma sprawled backward, hitting the ground hard.
Die on your back, bitch!
Ethna said, raising her sword high. Emma flung her hands out as if they could ward off the blade. Ethna laughed, swung down, and toppled sideways. Emma scrambled upright, choking on smoke and disbelief. Julian. He had thrown himself onto Ethna and was kneeling on her back, stabbing her over and over with something clenched in his fist. Emma realized with a shock that it was the iron figurine that Simon had given to him. Ethna was screaming, trying to writhe away from the iron. Emma whirled around. The room was blazing with fire, the boulders glowing like red-hot coals. Hot pain stabbed her side. A coal had landed on the sleeve of her jacket. She yanked it off furiously and stomped on it, putting the fire out.
Sorry, Clary.
She thought she could still see the dim figures of the others through the smoke. The surface of the portal seemed to ripple like melting glass.
Julian!
She screamed and held out her hand.
Leave her! We have to get to the others!
He looked up, his eyes wild with rage, and Ethna wrenched away from him with a yelp of anger and pain. Julian landed on his feet, already racing toward Emma. Together they fled toward the sound of Christina's voice, rising and desperate, shouting their names. Emma thought she could hear Mark, too, and the others. A sheet of flame blazed up from the ground, knocking them backward. They swung around, looking for a way around it, and Emma gasped. Ethna and Eohaid were striding toward them. Ethna bloodied and glaring, Eohaid gleaming and deadly. The riders were at the heart of their power. Emma and Julian were starving, exhausted and weakened. Emma's heart sank.
Christina!
She screamed.
Go! Go! Get out of here!
Julian caught hold of her wrist.
There's only one way.
His eyes flicked toward the wall. She tensed, then nodded, and the two of them took off running, just as the riders began to raise their blades. Emma heard them cry out in confusion and disappointed bloodlust. She didn't care. The portal was looming up in front of her like a dark window of a high-rise building, all shadow and gleam. She reached it and leapt, Julian's hand in hers, and together they sailed through the portal.
Diego wasn't sure how long he'd been in the Baronstone cell. There were no windows, no sense of time passing. He knew Rayan and Divya were in the same prison, but the thick stone walls of the cells kept them from being able to shout or call to each other. It was almost a relief when there were footsteps in the corridor, and instead of the usual guard who came twice a day with a plate of bland food, Zara appeared, resplendent in Centaurian gear. He would have thought she would be smirking, but she was oddly expressionless. Cortana was strapped to her side, and she caressed its hilt absently as she looked at him through the bars, as if she were stroking the head of a dog.
"My dear fiancé," she said, "how are you finding the accommodations? Not too cold and unwelcoming?"
He said nothing. The rune of quietude the cohort had put on him had been removed almost immediately after the meeting, but that didn't mean he had anything to talk to Zara about.
"And to think," she went on, "if you'd played your cards a little differently, you might have been living in the guard tower with me."
"And that wouldn't have been cold and unwelcoming," spat Diego, "living with someone I hate." She flinched a little. Diego was surprised. Surely she knew they hated each other.
"You have no right or reason to hate me," she said. "I'm the one who was betrayed. You were a convenient marriage prospect. Now you're a traitor. It would shame me to marry you."
Diego let his head fall back against the wall.
"Good," he said wearily. "You've taken everything from me. At least I no longer have to pretend to love you."
Her lips tightened.
"I know you never intended to go through with the marriage. You were just trying to buy time for your vigilante brother. Still, I'll make you a deal. You claim Jaime still has the fairy artifact. We want it. It should be in government hands."
Her lips twisted into an ugly smirk.
"If you tell us where to find it, I'll pardon you."
"I haven't the vaguest idea," said Diego.
"Carrying that sword around won't make you Emma Carstairs."
She glared at him.
"You shouldn't have said that. Or the thing about how I've taken everything from you already. You still have a lot to lose." She turned her head. "Milo, bring the second prisoner forward."
There was a blur of movement in the shadowy corner, and the cell door opened. Diego strained forward as a dark figure was hurled into the cell alongside him. Milo slammed the door shut and locked it as the new arrival groaned and sat up. Diego's heart turned over in his chest. Even bruised and bloody, with his lip cut and a burn scar on his cheek, he would have recognized his younger brother anywhere.
"Jaime," he breathed. "He seems to know no more about the artifact than you do," said Zara. "But then, without the mortal sword, we can't make him tell the truth. So we have to fall back on more old-fashioned methods of dealing with liars and traitors." She traced the hilt of Cortana with loving fingertips. "I'm sure you know what I mean." "Jaime,"
Diego said again. The ceiling was too low for him to stand up. He crawled across the floor to his brother, pulling Jaime against him.
Jaime, half-conscious, lolled against his shoulder, his eyes almost slitted shut. His clothes were torn and wet with blood. Diego felt a cold fear at his heart. What wounds lay underneath?
"Hola, hermano,"
Jaime whispered.
"During his discussions with the Inquisitor about the location of the artifact, your brother became overexcited. He needed to be subdued."
Now Zara did smile.
"The guards accidentally, shall we say, injured him. It would be a shame if his injuries were to become infected, or if he were to die because he lacked proper medical care."
"Give me Steely," hissed Diego. He had never hated anyone more than he hated Zara at that moment. "He needs an Arazi."
"Give me the artifact," said Zara.
and he can have one.
Diego said nothing. He had no idea where the Eternidad was, the heirloom that Jaime had suffered so much to protect. He held his brother tighter, his lips pressed together. He would not beg Zara for mercy. She had only contempt for the idea.
No,
she preened.
As you like. Perhaps when your brother is screaming with fever, you will feel differently. Call upon me, Diego dear, if you ever change your mind.
Manuel strode into the throne room, smirking, Oban on his heels. Manuel couldn't help the smirking. As he sometimes told people, it was just a natural expression on his face. It was true that he also liked chaos, though, and right now there was chaos aplenty to please him. The throne room looked charred, the rock walls and floor smeared with gray ash. The place reeked of blood and sulfur. Bodies of redcaps were strewn on the floor, one covered by an expensive-looking tapestry. On the far wall, the shrinking portal showed a beach at night, under a red moon. Oban clicked his tongue, which Manuel had learned was the fairy equivalent of letting out a low whistle.
What happened here? It looks like the aftermath of one of my more famous parties.
Manuel poked at the tapestry-covered mound with his toe.
And the fields outside are full of fleeing Seelie Fae now that their queen is gone,
Oban went on.
Manuel, I demand an explanation. Where is my father?
Winter, the somber-looking redcap leader, came over to them. He was streaked with blood and ash.
Prince, he said, your father lies here.
He indicated the mound Manuel was poking with his toe. Manuel bent over and yanked the tapestry back. The thing beneath did not look human, or fey, or as if it had ever lived at all. It was the blackened, crumbling outline of a man drawn in ash, its face a rictus. Something gleamed at its throat. Manuel knelt to take it, an etched glass vial of scarlet liquid.
Interesting.
He placed it in his jacket pocket.
What's that? Said Oban.
For a moment, Manuel felt a spark of worry that Oban had chosen to take an interest in something important. Fortunately, that was not the case. Oban had caught sight of a gleaming elf bolt necklace among his father's remains. He bent to grab the shining thing, letting it dangle from his fingers.
Kieran? He said incredulously. Kieran killed our father?
Doesn't matter, said Manuel in a low voice. The old man is dead.
That is good news.
It was indeed.
The previous king had been an uneasy ally, if one could call him an ally at all. Though the cohort had helped him spread the blight in Idris, and that had pleased him, he had never trusted them or interested himself in their greater plans. Nor had he warned them of his intention to seize the Black Volume, an event which had irritated Horus greatly. Oban would be different. He would trust those who had put him in power. He was a fool.
It might give Kieran claim to the throne if it were known, said Oban, his slack, handsome face darkening. Who saw the king slain? What of Kieran's Nephilim companions?
My redcaps saw, but they will not speak, said Winter, as Oban moved to the throne.
The king's crown rested on its seat, gleaming dully.
Prince Kieran has fled with most of the Nephilim to the human world.
Oban's face tightened.
Where he might brag of slaying our father?
I don't think he will do that, said General Winter.
A look of relief crossed Oban's face. He did tend to respond like putty to anyone in authority, Manuel thought.
He seems to love those Nephilim who he has befriended dearly, and they him. I do not think he wants the throne, or would endanger them.
We will keep a watch out, said Oban. Where is Adain?
Adain, your brother, was taken prisoner by the Seelie Queen.
Adain take a prisoner? Asked Oban, and when Winter nodded,
He laughed and tumbled into the throne's seat. And what of the queen's son, the brat?
Gone with the undead witch through the portal, said Winter. It does not seem likely they will survive long.
Well, the kingdom cannot go without a ruler. It seems my destiny has found me.
Oban handed the crown to Winter.
Crown me.
With the death of the king, the portal was disappearing. It was now the size of a porthole on a boat. Through the small circle, Manuel could see a dead city, ruined towers and broken roads. Something lay in a heap on the floor near the portal, among the signs of a fight. Manuel stopped to pick it up. It was a bloody jean jacket. He frowned, turning it over in his hands. It was a small jacket, a girl's, slashed and bloody, one sleeve partially burned. He slipped his fingers into the breast pocket and withdrew a ring stamped with butterflies. Fairchild. Manuel returned to Oban just as Winter placed the crown on the prince's head, looking extremely uncomfortable. Manuel shook the jacket in Winter's direction.
You said most of the Nephilim returned to the human world. What happened to the girl who wore this? The girl and the boy? The Nephilim prisoners?
They went through the portal. Winter gestured toward it. They're as good as dead. That land is poison, especially to those such as they.
He stepped back from Oban.
You are king now, sire.
Oban touched the crown on his head and laughed.
Bring wine, Winter. I am parched. Empty the cellars. The most beautiful maidens and youths of the court, bring them to me. Today's a great day.
Manuel smiled down at the bloody jacket. Yes, today is indeed a day for celebration.
Part 2. Thule.
I had a dream, which was not all a dream. The bright sun was extinguished, and the stars did wander, darkling in the eternal space, rayless and pathless, and the icy earth swung blind and blackening in the moonless air. Morn came and went and came and brought no day, and men forgot their passions in the dread of this their desolation, and all hearts were chilled into a selfish prayer for light. Lord Byron, Darkness.
Chapter 17. In a Strange City.
It wasn't a desert. It was a beach. The blackness of the portal had been like nothing Julian had ever experienced before. No light, sound, or movement, only the stomach-dropping feeling of having tumbled down an elevator shaft. When the world returned at last, it was a silent explosion rushing toward him. Reborn into sound and movement, he hit the ground hard, sand spraying up around him. He rolled to his side, heart pounding. He had lost hold of Emma's hand somewhere in the hurtling darkness, but there she was, struggling to her knees beside him. Her fairy clothes were shredded and bloodstained, but she seemed unharmed. A gasping pain went through him, sharp as an arrow. It took him a moment to recognize it as relief. Emma was scrambling to her feet, brushing herself off. Julian rose dizzily. They were on a wide, familiar-looking beach at night, dotted with half-eroded rock formations. Bluffs rose behind them, rickety wooden stairs twisting down their faces to connect the road above with the sand. Music was playing, loud and jarring. The far end of the beach was thronged with people, none of whom seemed to have noticed their abrupt arrival. It was a peculiar crowd, a mix of humans, vampires, and even a few fairies dotted here and there, garbed in black and metal. Julian squinted but couldn't make out details. Emma touched the night vision rune on her own arm and frowned at him.
My runes aren't working, she whispered. Same as in fairy.
Julian shook his head as if to say, I don't know what's going on. He started as something sharp pricked his side. Glancing down, he realized his phone had been smashed to pieces. Jagged bits of plastic stuck into his skin. He dropped the phone with a wince. It would be no use to anyone now. He glanced around. The sky was heavily clouded, and a blood-red moon cast a dull glow across the sand. I know this beach, he said. The rock formations were familiar, the curve of the shoreline, the shape of the waves, though the color of the ocean water was ink black, and where it broke against the shoreline it left edgings of black lace. Emma touched his shoulder. Julian, we need to make a plan. She was gray with fatigue, shadows smudged under her deep brown eyes. Her golden hair fell in thick tangles around her shoulders. Emotion exploded inside Julian. Pain, love, panic, grief, and yearning poured through him like blood from a wound whose sutures had torn open. He staggered away from Emma and crumpled against a rock, his stomach heaving violently as it emptied itself of bitter bile. When his body had stopped spasming, he wiped his mouth, scrubbed his hands with sand, and returned to where Emma had partly climbed one of the rock formations. Sea stacks, they were called, or something like that. He clenched his hands. His emotions roiled like a hurricane tide, pressing against the inside of his skull. And in response, his mind seemed to be running all over the place, catching at random pieces of information and tossing them up like roadblocks. Focus, he told himself, and bit at his lip until the pain cleared his head. He could taste blood. Emma was halfway up the sea stack, staring toward the south. This is really, really weird. Weird how? He was surprised how normal he sounded. In the distance, two figures passed by, both vampires. One a girl with long brown hair. They waved at him casually. What the hell was going on? She jumped down. Are you okay? She asked, pushing back her hair. I think it was the trip through the portal, he lied. Whatever was going on with him, it wasn't that. Look at this. Emma had somehow managed to hang on to her phone through all their travails. She flicked through to show Julian a photo she'd taken from the sea stack. It was dark, but he immediately recognized the shoreline. And, in the distance, the ruins of Santa Monica Pier. The Ferris wheel had been tipped over, a crushed hunk of metal. Dark shapes wheeled in the sky above. They were definitely not birds. Emma swallowed hard. This is Los Angeles, Julian. This is right near the Institute. But the king said this was Thule. He said it was a world that was poisonous to Nephilim. He broke off in horror. At the opposite end of the beach from the crowd, two long columns of human figures were marching in neat military formation. As they grew closer, Julian caught sight of a flash of scarlet gear. He and Emma dived behind the nearest rock formation, pressing themselves flat against it. They could see the marchers getting closer. The throng at the other end of the beach had started to move toward them as well, and the music had vanished. There was only the sound of the crashing waves, the wind, and marching feet. And darkened, Emma breathed as they drew closer. During the Dark War, Sebastian Morgenstern had kidnapped hundreds of shadow hunters and controlled them using his own version of the Mortal Cup. They had been called the Undarkened, and they had been recognizable by the scarlet gear they wore. Julian's father had been one of them until Julian had killed him. He still dreamed about it. But the Undarkened are all dead, Julian said in a distant mechanical tone. They died when Sebastian died. In our world, Emma turned to him. Julian, we know what this is. We just don't want it to be the truth. This is, Thule is a version of our own world. Something must have happened differently in the past here. Something that put this world on an alternate path, like Edom. Julian knew she was right. He had known it since he recognized the peer. He shoved back thoughts of his own family, his father. He couldn't think about that right now. The columns of Marching and Darkened had given way to a cluster of guards holding banners. Each banner bore the sigil of a star inside a circle. "By the angel," Emma whispered. She pressed her hand against her mouth. "Morgenstern, the morning star." Behind the flag bearers walked Sebastian. He looked older than he had the last time Julian had seen him. A teenage boy with hair like white ice, powered by hatred and poison. He looked to be in his mid-20s now, still slim and boyish, but with a harder cast to his face. The features that had been gently edged were sharp as glass now, and his black eyes burned. Phosphorus, the Morgenstern sword, was slung over his shoulder in a scabbard worked with a design of stars and flames. Walking just behind him was Jace Herondale. It was a harder and stranger blow. They had just left Jace, fighting by their side in the Unseelie Court, weary and tired, but still fierce and protective. This Jace looked to be about the same age as that one. He was strongly muscled all over, his golden hair tousled, his face as handsome as ever. But there was a dead, dark light in his golden eyes, a sullen ferocity that Julian associated with the cohort and their ilk, those who attacked rather than those who protected. Behind them came a woman with gray-brown hair Julian recognized as Amatis Greymark, Luke's sister. She had been one of the first and fiercest of Sebastian's Undarkened, and that seemed true here as well. Her face was deeply lined, her mouth grimly set. She pushed a prisoner ahead of her, someone dressed in Shadowhunter black, a strip of rough canvas wrapped around and around their head, obscuring their features.
"Come!" Sebastian cried, and some invisible force amplified his voice so that it boomed up and down the beach. "Undarken, guests, gather round. We are here to celebrate the capture and execution of a significant traitor, one who has turned against the light of the star."
There was a roar of excitement. The crowd began to gather into a loose rectangle, with Sebastian and his guards at the south end of it. Julian saw Jace lean over to say something to Sebastian, and Sebastian laughed with an easy camaraderie that sent a chill down Julian's spine. Jace wore a gray suit jacket, not a scarlet uniform, so he wasn't Undarkened then. His gaze flicked around the crowd. Other than Amatis, he recognized several shadow hunters he had known vaguely from the Los Angeles Conclave. He saw the young-looking vampire girl who had waved at him before, giggling and talking to Anselm Nightshade. And he saw Emma. It was clearly Emma. He would have known Emma anywhere, in any costume, in any darkness or light. The bloody moon spilled onto her pale hair. She wore a red dress with no back, and her skin was smooth and free of runes. She was talking to a tall boy who was mostly in shadow, but Julian barely looked at him. He was looking at her, his Emma, beautiful and alive and safe, and she laughed and reached her arms up. The tall young man threaded his hands into Emma's hair, and she kissed him. It hit him with the sudden force of a train. Jealousy, white-hot, boiling, venomous. It was all Julian could do to stay behind the rock as the boy's hands trailed down Emma's bare back. He shook with the force of his feeling. Emotion tore at him, threatening to overwhelm him and drive him to his knees. Hot waves of jealousy mixed with desperate longing. Those ought to be his hands on Emma's hair, her skin. He turned his head to the side, gasping. His shirt was stuck to his body with sweat. Emma, the real Emma, still pressed up against the rock beside him, looked at him with alarm. "Julian? What's wrong?" His heartbeat had already begun to slow. This was his Emma. The other was a fake, a simulacrum. "Look," he whispered and gestured.
Emma followed his gaze and blushed.
Oh, that's us.
Julian stared around the rock again. Emma and the boy had pulled apart, and how had he not seen it? It was like looking into a mirror that showed you what you might look like in a few years. There he was, blackthorn hair and eyes, sea glass bracelet, dressed in red and black. Julian stared as the other him drew the other Emma closer and kissed her again. It definitely wasn't a first kiss, or even a second one. Other Julian's fingers trailed down other Emma's back, obviously luxuriating in the feel of her bare skin. His hands found her satin-covered hips and splayed over them, pulling her body closer. She raised a leg and hooked it over his hip, letting her head fall back so he could press his lips to her throat. Other Julian was a very confident kisser, apparently.
"This is the worst," said Emma. "Not only are we apparently Andarkin in this world, we're huge on PDA."
"The other Andarkin probably can't stand us," said Julian. "Emma, this seems recent. This world couldn't have split from ours that long ago."
"Silence!" Sebastian's voice echoed up and down the beach, and the crowd hushed. Alternate Emma and Julian stopped kissing, which was a relief. "Jace, put the traitor on her knees."
So it was a woman. Julian watched with a twisting feeling in his empty stomach as Jace shoved the prisoner to her knees and began slowly to unwind her blindfold.
"Ash," Sebastian called. "Ash, come watch, my child, and learn."
Julian felt Emma freeze up in shock beside him. There was a stir among the guards, and from among them appeared Ash Morgenstern, his expression rigid. He had changed more since the last time they'd seen him than either Jace or Sebastian had. He had gone from 13 to what Emma would have guessed was 17. He was no longer a skinny kid, but a boy on the cusp of adulthood, tall and broad-shouldered. His white blonde hair had been cut short, and he wasn't wearing Andarkin red, just an ordinary white thermal shirt and jeans. He still had the X-shaped scar on his throat, though. It was unmistakable, even at this distance.
Ash crossed his arms over his chest. "I'm here, father," he said blandly. And it struck Julian how peculiar it was. This 17-year-old boy calling someone who looked 5 years older than he did father.
"This is our world's Ash," Julian said. "The one Annabelle brought through the portal." Emma nodded. "His scar, I saw."
Jace drew the last of the coverings away from the kneeling woman's face.
Emma flinched back as if struck. It was Maris Lightwood. Her hair had been cut very short, and her face was haggard.
Ash watched expressionless as she gazed around her in silent horror. A silver chain dangled around his throat.
Julian didn't recall him having it in Faerie. How many years had elapsed for him here between his escape into the portal and Emma and Julian's arrival in Thule?
"Maris Lightwood," said Sebastian, pacing in a slow circle around her. Emma hadn't moved or made a sound since her initial flinch. Julian wondered if she was remembering Maris in their world, grieving at the sight of her former husband's pyre, but surrounded by her children, her grandchildren.
Emma must be wondering about her own parents, he realized with a jolt, wondering if they were alive in this world, but she hadn't said a word.
"You stand accused of aiding and assisting rebels against the cause of the fallen star? Now, we know you did it, so we're not having a trial, because we're against those anyway. But you. You committed the greatest treason of all. You tried to break the bond between two brothers. Jace and I are brothers. You are not his mother. The only family he has is me."
"Oh, my God," Emma whispered. "This is that weird bond they had. When Sebastian possessed Jace, remember? So that happened in this world."
"I killed my own mother, Lilith, for Jace," said Sebastian. "Now he, will kill his mother for me. Jace unsheathed the sword at his waist. It had a long, wicked silver blade that glimmered red in the moonlight. Julian thought again of the Jace in their world, laughing, joking, animated. It seemed like something more than possession was at work here, like this Jace was dead inside. Sebastian's lips were turned up at the corners. He was smiling, but it wasn't a very human smile.
Any last words, Maris?
Maris twisted around so she was looking up at Jace. The tense lines of her face seemed to relax, and for a moment Julian saw John Carstairs looking at Emma, or his own mother looking at him. That mixture of love for what is, and the sorrow for what cannot be kept.
"Do you remember, Jace?" she said. "That song I used to sing to you when you were a boy?" She began to sing, her voice high and wavering.
À la claire enfant mon allant promener, j'ai trouvé l'eau si belle que je m'y suis peigné. Il y a longtemps que je t'aimais, j'aimais, je ne t'oublierai.
Julian only knew enough French to translate a few words. I have loved you for a long time. I will never forget you.
Il y a longtemps que je t'aimais.
Maris sang, her voice rising, quavering at the highest note. Ash was gripping his own elbows tightly. He turned his head aside, just at the moment that Jace brought the sword down and across, severing Maris's head from her body. White bone, red blood. Her body crumpled to the sand, her head rolling to lie cheek down, open-eyed. She still seemed to be staring at Jace. Blood had spattered Ash's face, his shirt. The crowd was clapping and cheering. Jace bent to clean his sword on the sand as Sebastian strolled over to Ash, his smile turning from inhuman to something else, something possessive.
I hope that was a learning experience, he said to Ash.
I learn not to wear white to an execution, said Ash, brushing his hand down the front of his shirt. It left red smears behind. Useful.
Once we have the mortal instruments in hand, you'll see a lot more death, Ash.
Sebastian chuckled and once again raised his voice.
Feeding time, he announced, and the words rang up and down the beach.
There was a scream inside Julian's head, clawing to get out. He glanced at Emma and saw the same scream in her eyes. Maybe it belonged to them both. She grabbed his wrist with enough force to grind small bones together.
We have to go, we have to get away.
Her words tumbled over each other. Julian didn't even have time to agree. As the vampires closed in on Maris's body, they ran for the bluffs, keeping low. The night was filled with a cacophony of shrieks and howls, and the air carried the coppery tinge of blood. Emma was whispering,
"No, no, no,"
under her breath, even as she hit the bottom of a rickety wooden staircase and bolted up it in a crouching run. Julian followed, doing his best not to look back. He didn't want to see what feeding time looked like. The stairs shook underfoot but held. The top of the bluffs were in sight. Emma reached the end of the stairs and cried out as she was whisked out of sight. Julian's vision went white. He had no awareness of climbing the rest of the steps. He was simply at the top of the bluffs, familiar highway, rows of parked cars, sand and grass underfoot. And there was Emma, held in the grip of a tall, red-headed boy whose familiar face smacked Julian like a punch in the gut.
Cameron? Julian said, incredulous.
Cameron Ashdown. Cameron looked about 19 or 20. His thick red hair was cut military short. He was whipcord lean, wearing a tan t-shirt and camo pants.
A Sam Brown belt slung diagonally across his shoulder. There was a pistol thrust through it. His face twisted in disgust.
Both of you together,
I might have guessed. Julian took a step forward.
Let her go, you in darkened piece of—
Cameron's eyes rounded with almost comical surprise, and Emma took advantage of the moment to kick back savagely, twisting her body to deliver several quick punches to his side. She spun away from him as he gagged, but he'd already gotten the pistol out of its holster. He pointed it at both of them. Shadowhunters didn't use guns, but Julian could tell just by the way he held it that this Cameron Ashdown knew them well. If Cameron shot, Julian thought, there might be time for him to throw himself in front of Emma. He'd take the bullet, even if he hated the idea of leaving her here alone.
Cameron raised his voice. Livia, he called. You're going to want to see this.
Julian's chest turned to ice. He imagined he was still breathing. He must be, or he'd die, but he couldn't feel it. Couldn't feel the blood in his body, or the pulse of his breath, or the beat of his heart. He only saw her, appearing from between two cars. She walked toward them casually, her long, dark blackthorn hair blowing in the wind off the sea. Livy. She looked about 17. She wore black leather pants with a bullet belt slung around her waist and a gray tank top with holes in it over a mesh shirt. Her boots were thick-soled with a dozen buckles. On her wrists were D-ring canvas bracelets with short throwing knives shoved under the straps. A scar, one of many, cut across her face, from the top of her left temple across her eye to the middle of her cheek. She carried a shotgun, and as she walked toward them, she raised it effortlessly and pointed it directly at Julian.
It's them, Cameron said. Don't know what they're doing away from the other end darkened.
Who cares, Livy said. I'm gonna kill them, and they'd thank me for it if they still had souls.
Julian threw up his hands. Joy at seeing her, uncontrollable and dizzying, warred with panic.
Livy, it's us!
Don't even try, she spat. She pumped the shotgun expertly.
I tell you to pray, but the angel is dead.
Look, Emma started, and Livy began to swing the gun toward her. Julian took a step toward his sister, and then Cameron, who Julian had almost forgotten was there, said,
Wait.
Livy froze. This had better be good, Cam. Cameron pointed at Julian. His collar's torn. He shook his head impatiently.
Show her,
he said to Julian.
Your rune,
Emma whispered. And Julian, realization bursting brightly behind his eyes, yanked his collar down to show Livy the rune on his chest. Though Julian's impermanent runes, night vision, stealth, shore strike, had been fading to gray since they'd entered Ferry, his Parapetai rune stood out black and clear.
Livy froze.
The Undarkin can't bear Nephilim runes, said Julian. You know that, Livy.
I know you think we're Emma and Julian, the Undarkin version, said Emma. But we've seen them. They're down on the beach, she pointed. Seriously, look.
A flicker of doubt crossed Libby's face.
Cameron, go look.
Cameron went to the edge of the bluffs and peered down through a pair of binoculars. Julian held his breath. He could tell Emma was holding hers as well.
Yeah, they're there, Cameron said after a long pause. And they're making out. Gross.
They were always doing that before they were in Darken, said Libby. Some things never change.
Emma raised her left hand to show her voyance rune.
We're shadow hunters. We know you, Livy, and we love you.
Stop, Livy said fiercely.
Fine. Maybe you're not the Undarkin, but this could still be some kind of demonic shape-changing.
These are angelic runes, said Julian. We're not demons.
Then who are you?
Livy cried, and her voice echoed with an awful hopelessness, a loneliness as dark and bottomless as a well.
Who am I supposed to think you are?
We're still us, Emma said. Jules and Emma. We're from another world. One where Sebastian is not in charge. One with runes. Livy stared at her blankly.
Liv, said Cameron, lowering his binoculars. The party on the beach is starting to break up. They'll be climbing up here any second. What are we doing?
Livy hesitated. but only for a second. Julian guessed that a lot of free time to make decisions wasn't a luxury.